My name is George Knapp, in tonight for my friend George Norrie. I want to say thanks again to Terry Hansen, author of The Missing Times. And again, not to oversell it, but folks, if you're interested in the UFO topic and how it fits into the whole discussion of national security issues, it's an excellent book if you can find it. I think Sean, our webmaster, has put a link on the website that makes it easier for you to take a look at it. Also there on the website, Coast to Coast, a lot of other news tidbits that he and I have gathered, some UFO stories from top-notch UFO writers, including Larry Lowe and Lee Spiegel, and another article about the future of the International Space Station, how it might depend on space entrepreneurs, folks like Bob Bigelow of Las Vegas and others who are hoping to get the government out of the way and go out there into space. We're going to open up the phone lines, jump right into talking about whatever is on your mind right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for spending part of your evening with us. I'm George Knapp in for George Norrie. We're going to the phones on the wildcard line. Mike in Illinois, what's on your mind, Mike?
Hey, George, how you doing?
Okay.
In regards to the Phoenix scenario, you've heard of NORAD, right?
Sure.
Okay. I was an officer there for 2 years. During that time, I was stationed at the response team. There was a UFO over the top of Phoenix. We contacted Luke Air Force Base, scrambled two F-4s. They went up and verified it. And I can tell you what I know. What I know is that some of the UFOs have a cloaking device, and that the UFO that they spotted that night was having a malfunction, and its cloaking device came off. And so what we did is we scrambled two C-131s out of Mountain Davis Air Force Base and instructed them to drop night flares. Now, this was about 45 minutes to an hour after it happened.
As a cover story?
As a cover story. And then our commanding officer released to the press that what people were seeing were the night flares. But after the UFO and after it got itself repaired, and as soon as it cleared the airspace because of the propulsion, as soon as it cleared the airspace over Phoenix, it took off like at its regular rate of speed.
Which was what?
In regards to the speed?
Yeah.
Far beyond anything we could track on the radar at that time. It's like if the blimp was there, and then the blimp was gone. But we were contacted by the Pentagon at NORAD. And they scrambled and took the NORAD to DEFCON 2. And that's when we got our instructions from the Pentagon on what to do. They have a special task force at NORAD for those things. And I did not participate. I was there. I saw the whole thing. I didn't get involved in releasing anything or anything like that.
I don't know how much you want to get into this on, Mike. How long were you in the service? How long were you with NORAD?
Okay, I was 22 years in the service. And you only assigned to NORAD for no more than 3 years.
So tell me this, what is it like? You're in a room with all this equipment and screens, I would imagine, and computers, and something like that happens. Do you look at the guy next to you? Do your eyes get wide, or do you play it cool? Can you talk about it later? What happened?
Well, okay, here's the philosophy with the military now. Nobody's going to believe us. So there is no such thing anymore of telling you, you know, you can't say this, you can't say that, you can't say this, you can't say that. There has been so much debunking over the years that now, I mean, when we left, now you go in there and you stay for like 30 days at a time. It's like they've got a hospital, they got a store, they got places where you live, everything else. So you're in there for 30 days at a time. And they don't tell you anymore what you can tell and what you can't tell, because who's going to believe it?
And when you say NORAD, are you talking about, were you in Cheyenne Mountain or?
Yes, I was in Cheyenne Mountain. Right at the, right Fort Carson was the guards and stuff were.
And after it's over, the next day, you're having coffee, you're in the cafeteria eating lunch. Do you talk to your fellow servicemen and say, well, how's that go? What's that conversation like?
Well, no, I was an officer, so I didn't mingle with the enlisted men too much. But the officers, basically, you talk about the situation, but you don't get too involved in the situation because that you knew that if you did, that somebody was going to be calling you on the carpet. And, you know, you have to have a pretty good security clearance work there anyway. And nobody wanted to take a chance to losing that security clearance.
Sure. And is it the kind of thing where, as you mentioned, look, nobody's going to believe this. It's been debunked. We don't really have to worry about keeping it a secret. Somebody asks us, a newspaper or TV, we'll just deny it. And what are they going to do about it?
Well, and you know, there's ways of covering things up without, like I said, the NORAD scrambled two C-130s out of Mountain Davis Air Force Base in Tucson and instructed them to drop the night flares. Now, this was like 45 minutes to an hour after it happened. The people saw that, so they called the major news broadcasters and told them that, you know, they had a reason for, they figured out what was going on and had the flares dropped. I will tell you that we locked down Luke Air Force Base. We wouldn't let anything come in or go out. We instructed Luke Air Force Base not to give any information and that it was all to be handled by the information officer. And Luke Air Force Base cooperated.
You said you scrambled jets from Luke to chase this thing or go after it?
We scrambled two F-4s, okay, and we told them to go silent, which means when they go silent, they don't turn their lights or anything on so that people can't see them flying at night. And, I mean, you would hear them, but they were high enough that, but they did track it. They did follow it. And once its cloaking device came back on, then it took off. And on the blimp, we record, the last thing I remember recording was an excess, when the excess of probably in the neighborhood of about 200 knots, or 2,000 knots, I'm sorry.
Tell me this, what would the standing order have been for those jets? Just fly alongside, take pictures, watch what it does, shoot at it? What's the standing order?
No, they did not have orders to shoot, none whatsoever. No orders to shoot. It was more of an escort. It was more of a they had to define it because whether you believe it or not, there's, you know, some people don't believe it, some people do. But there is UFOs and there's three or four different types, and so we sent the jets up to verify what kind it was. The whole nine yards. The jets stayed up above it, circled it. They were at roughly in the neighborhood of 25 to 30,000 feet. The UFO was in the neighborhood of around 10,000 feet. And it was slowly losing some of its elevation.
Tell me this. Now, you mentioned that you felt that the cloaking device, at least that was the story, malfunctioned, and then they turned it back on and it worked and it got out of there. I guess you're probably just guessing about that, right? I mean, could they have done it on purpose?
I can tell you this. We got a call from the Pentagon, and it came in on the blue phone, and that's a direct line from the Pentagon. Red phone's a direct line to the president. But the blue phone lit up, and when it does, the yellow light goes off in the building. They shut down all of the rooms. They secure where the computers and everything are at. And when that line come in, they answered it, the commander answered it. They told him that there was but they didn't call it a UFO, and I can't tell you what they call it.
There is a term, you just can't tell us?
Right.
Huh.
Okay. But they have a term that they use, and they said it was coming in across the Mexico border, through Tucson, crossing the Phoenix, Arizona area, up towards Sedona.
Well, you know, there are some reports that something like that was seen the same night here in southern Nevada. You know anything about that?
All I can tell you is, I mean, I'm probably saying too much the way it is.
Have you ever told anyone this before?
No, in fact, I didn't even give you my real name when I was on the phone.
Understandable. Would there be consequences for you now? You're out of the service. What could they do? You don't want to find out.
I don't want to go into that either.
Okay.
I mean, you sign. I mean, you're taking a risk. But at my age, and I have ischemic heart disease, and I don't know how much longer I'm going to be around. So, I spent a tour in Vietnam and was hit with Agent Orange, and I have ischemic heart disease. And I just getting tired of all of the naysayers and all the people that really don't have any information, and they're guessing. I mean, sometimes I have to laugh at some of the stuff that the books and stuff put out, because it's just, it's a lot of it's guesswork.
Tell me this. Let me ask you this. You were in the service for 22 years, at least, I guess, 3 years with NORAD. Were there other incidents like this during your time there? Was it common knowledge?
Yes. We had them. You would average anywhere from 3 to 6 a month.
Wow.
But usually it was what we call in-outs. And in-outs were, they'd come in the atmosphere and right back out. And in and out. And then we called those in-outs. So it was nothing to get alarmed about, nothing to scramble jets about, nothing like that.
No way that this could be some other classified project that not even NORAD knows about.
That would be very, very unusual, because NORAD tracks it. We can even track ducks coming across the ocean. You know how to go out swimming by the ocean? No. We can track every piece of space debris that's in space.
One other question. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I will tell you also, the only other one that I was aware of is the one that was over Chicago. And that's because a good friend of mine who's still in the military, him and I talked about it one night on the phone. And that was at O'Hara Air Force Base. I mean, O'Hara Field. And I think it was the United Flights that saw it. And I know it hovered over the top of the tower. And it shot right straight up. And I know the debunk on that was, it was supposed to be ice crystals that poked a hole in the clouds.
Is there a conclusion then within NORAD, within the military, that these are, they're just visitors, they're not a threat. They're not a threat to us.
I wouldn't go that far either. I will tell you, they do track and alert on some of the UFCNs. And there's some that they don't, some of them they do.
Mike, one other question, where does information like that go? Or there's got to be charts and reports, and does somebody collect this task force you mentioned? Do they collect statements from anybody who saw it? Do they go around and tell you to shut up?
Is there a
black briefcase? No, nothing like that?
No, that's all a bunch of conspiracy stuff. It's all coded. It's all crypt and coded and sent back to the Pentagon. Well, actually, it goes to Fort Meade, Maryland. Okay? It's all encrypted. Goes to Fort Meade, Maryland.
And would you imagine that it's in a computer somewhere, or that it gets destroyed? Or I'm just guesswork on your part, but what do you think happens to it?
I doubt that it gets destroyed, because when some of the UFCONs would come in, and they would pull up serial numbers. And that's how we tracked them.
The what? The FCONs?
Oh, yeah. UFOs.
Okay. I guess that's the term, isn't it?
I probably talked too long. They're going to be tracing my phone.
Okay, well, we'll let you off. I'll tell you what, Mike, if you're interested, send me an email. I sure would like to continue the conversation. I promise not to compromise your identity or anything like that. Don't want to get you in trouble. Just want to know more. Appreciate the call. Thanks very much. East of the Rockies. Wow, that's quite a call there. East of the Rockies, Moses in Tallahassee. Hi, Moses. How you doing?
Fine, George. How about yourself?
Okay, good morning to you.
Good morning to you as well, and to your listeners. Yeah, I was led to Coast to Coast back in 1994, and I really thank the Most High God for leading me to this program.
Well, we're glad you're part of the program. What's on your mind?
Okay, again, I've been led to, again, associate a lot of the Egyptian deities to the Bible. Again, the Bible from the five major religions, be it Hinduism, Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, the Holy Bible has the most information for those truth seekers who are trying to find, you know, to be led to the truth. Again, Ezekiel saw four individuals, and he saw the one who had the face of a lion. It was really a lioness. Her name is Sekhmet. And the one who had the face of a man, he did not wear an attribute or mask. His name was Ptah. And they are husband and wife. And he saw the face of a bull or oxen, and that was Ra in the form of Atun-Ra, because Ra took on three forms. The morning sun was the falcon, the noon sun was the bull, and the setting sun, Amen, is the form of the ram. And another, he saw the face of an eagle or falcon, and that would be Horus. Again, it says in Revelation 3:14, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. So, again, the Bible, for those who are not really seeking, seems to turn people away from Egypt, but once a person have been led to more information, they won't be led into worship, because the Egyptian, it was first called Kemet. The Greeks named it Egypt, meaning the land of the burnt faces, or the black faces. Jacob wrestled with God to be called a holy name, and his name was changed to Israel. Is Isis, and Ra again is Amun-Ra, and El is the spirit, the creative force that created the universe. Where Emmanuel, Yahshua, Jesus is, and the true worshipers will worship God in spirit and in truth.
Hey, Moses, while I got you here, let me just ask you this then. You mentioned about these names and what Ezekiel saw. A lot of folks in modern UFO research think that could have been a classic UFO, what we see today. And your take on it is this was something from God as opposed to alien visitors in craft?
Again, the craft that Ezekiel, that created a whirlwind that took him up to a mother craft. You're right. It denotes some means of power to lift him up and to take him up. So one would use
that. Moses, that music from Elvis tells us we're taking a break. I appreciate the call and your insight into that. We go back to the phones after this break. Stay with us, everyone, on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to the phone lines. They're pretty much full. Lots of questions on your minds. We can take it wherever you want to go. I'm George Knapp in tonight for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. We're on Coast to Coast here, west of the Rockies, Casey in Huntington Beach, California. Good morning, Casey. What's on your mind?
Hey, George. How are you tonight?
Okay.
Good. Wanted to let you know what I saw tonight. It was pretty amazing.
Let's hear it.
Well, I left my house about 10 o'clock, and first let me preface this by saying, I'm not crazy.
That remains to be seen. We'll see.
I have a full-time job and an education. So I was driving down the street in Huntington Beach heading south and happened to look up in my windshield and saw the brightest, orangest light I've ever seen in my entire life. Just hovering. Probably like helicopter height. And it stayed there for probably 4 to 5 minutes, and I couldn't believe my eyes. Basically, I stared at it. I pulled into a convenience store, which was my destination, and stood there and watched it with other people. In fact, other people came out of the convenience store. A son told his dad, "Dad, look at that bright light in the sky." And the dad joked and said, "It's just a UFO. Get in the car. Let's go."
And dad,
so I watched it for probably another 2 minutes, and there was other people coming in and out. Some people down at a tavern were looking at it. I went inside and told the clerk, I said, "You've got to see this. I need somebody else to see this so I know I'm not crazy." He comes out and says, "Oh, my gosh, what is that?" And I said, "I don't know." And then it started to fade at a 45-degree angle and pretty much got to be about the size of a star and disappeared.
Does anybody have a cell phone video or a photo of this thing?
No.
Nobody had a cell phone?
My cell phone shut off, if you can imagine that.
Well, that kind of stuff happens when you're dealing with these things. So it when you said fade, meaning it falls?
It didn't fall. It actually went up at an angle, at about a 45-degree angle, got to about the size of a star, and then disappeared.
So faded completely out?
Yes.
Not a flare?
It was the brightest orange light I've ever seen. I've never seen a flare look like that. Now, this was also right around where John Wayne Airport is. Anybody familiar with the Orange County area?
Sure.
Would understand where it's at. It was probably within a mile range of John Wayne Airport.
So presumably somebody at the airport would pick it up on radar if it's detectable in that way.
If it was detectable, then somebody should have picked something up.
Could it have been a plane coming in and just you had a strange angle at it, or a helicopter sitting over that airport for some reason, police helicopter?
No, actually the planes come in the from the direction that it went, they come in a perpendicular pattern, and then they land. So it was actually, it took off at the 45-degree angle and went perpendicular to where the planes normally fly. And we're used to having the planes take off and go. There was kind of a low hum sound, but I wouldn't say it was anything significant.
Well, I'll tell you what, Casey, for the moment, we're going to agree that you're not crazy, just for the sake of conversation. And I'll tell you what I'll do is we'll put out, we get a lot of listeners in Southern California. We'll see if anybody else saw this thing, or maybe somebody took a cell phone photo or video of it. And if so, I hope they'll call us or text us or fast blast us, and we'll get back to you on it. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. First time caller, Ron in Clovis, California. Hi, Ron.
It's an honor to talk to you and everybody on Coast to Coast. I've been trying to get my story out since last year when I did an 8-month study of the sun. It was only by accident. I set a digital camera on a tripod with a sun density filter over the front lens. And I had started with a telescope, but of course the filter was on the eyepiece and the sun was melting the inside of my telescope. So anyway, it works with a digital camera. I have a Carl Zeiss lens, 40 power digital, that uses a mini DVD disc. And since March through November of last year, it's like going fishing. About three times a day, I would go out on my patio here in Clovis, California, and set up the camera. And sometimes on our patio, then I'd have to move the camera out in front because of we have a shade over our, roof over our patio, so I'd have to move the camera. But about 7 in the morning, I'll start every day, and I'm doing it as we, each day as we speak. But 7 in the morning, about 1:30 in the afternoon, and then about 3 to 4:30 in the afternoon. And over this 8-month period, I have thousands of objects as diverse as snowflakes entering the sun's perimeter, the corona, and they're all on video. And I was using normal lighting, but what you have to do is open the aperture of your camera up all the way. Anybody can do this, but open the aperture up all the way so you won't see the sunspots, if there are any. But the sun will look like just a white disk, and then you'll see beyond the sun. And if you frame it properly, you can frame a million miles to either side of the sun and about 500,000 above and below the sun in your frame. So this is what I did. And I have, like I say, hundreds of objects as diverse in shape and size, some as large and many larger than the Earth. As of the distance, 93 million miles away, I'm thinking that these objects, now they interplay with the sun. So if they're near the sun, that gives me a little judgment as to size. And some of these objects have been determined by my observation in slow motion and whatever, and the coloration of the corona with these objects. And you won't believe the shapes. I wish I had a computer. I would send you some of this video. But the media has shut me down here in Clovis. I've submitted more information to all our TV stations. They won't touch it with a 10-foot pole. The newspaper, just this last Tuesday, I sent all my information. I haven't heard a word from them, the Fresno Bee. And I'm waiting for someone. I actually gave three shows. I worked up a compilation of these videos. It runs 26 minutes. And I gave a show at our Sierra Vista Mall, free admission. And I only had about 16 people show up, but the mall gave great publicity on their website. So, you know, it's just like you say, people aren't interested in the truth. And there was some young kid going by the door as I was giving the show, setting up, and he was heckling everybody in this room because they thought we were kooks. And here on the video, these objects, here are some of the facts, George, and then I'll let you talk. But these objects have intelligence, either artificial or biological, because of the way they move. They zigzag, and I have drawings from slow motion that I've done with these videos. Many are invisible and only are seen when near the sun. Many glow as bright as the sun when they're away from the sun or near the sun. They aren't reacting to the heat of the sun. They aren't reacting to the gravity of the sun, which is 300 times that of the Earth. And, you know, I'm actually a historian here in Clovis, so I'm taking this seriously, and the community isn't. Many interact with the sun. I have shots of objects that are about 7,000 miles in length or longer, like they're feeding off the energy of the sun. This is some footage that even the Science Channel hasn't got. I haven't seen any of this stuff before. And like I say, your listeners can do the same thing I'm doing. And please, I hope some do so they can see what I'm seeing. Many of these are traveling at FTL or faster than light. For instance, when they cross the frame on the camera, the sun is 865 plus thousand miles in diameter. Well, I have a million miles on either side of the sun in my frame, and these objects can cross from one side of the frame to the other and come back. They'll touch the surface of the sun and go back into deep space, and the shapes are unbelievable.
Okay, but hold on a second. All right.
They can do this in under a second.
I was going to comment, for you to be able to see something, 93 million miles or whatever to the sun, and you're seeing a million miles beyond it, and
this is off to the side. This isn't right behind or in front of the sun. These look like they're in the same plane with the surface of the sun.
I got you. But, I mean, my first comment would be these things have to be enormous for you be able to see them.
They are. And I'm judging to the coloration as they enter the corona, because you can see this on the film, and in slow motion, you can see the shapes even better, but the shapes are unusual. But no, some of these are like 400 to 500,000 miles in length, whatever these are. And these aren't flares off the sun. They may be off other stars that come toward the sun, but they don't react. They aren't absorbed into the sun's energy field. These things play around with the energy field around the sun. They'll come, touch it, and then they'll go back into space.
So, well, I'll tell you, Ron, slow down for a second here. That online, I'm on a bunch of different kind of chat groups and get a lot of emails a day. And I have had emails about objects like you're describing being seen in front of the sun. I really don't know what to make of them. My initial question would be, so many observatories and astronomers looking at the sun with very powerful telescopes.
I said the same thing.
Yeah. Why somebody wouldn't see this and ask a question?
I've contacted the astronomers at Fresno State University here in the Valley.
Did they look at your stuff?
Two of the astronomers, I showed them the clips. I had about four clips with me that day, and I asked the professors to see them too. And the professors wouldn't show up. But two of the members in the astronomy class saw them, and all they said was, "Oh, I haven't seen anything like that before." Well, what they're doing, either covering up or they're not using the approach I'm using. See, they're using filters to see the flares on the sun, what the activity on the sun is. But I agree. Why isn't anyone in astronomy seeing what I'm seeing? And I'm sure they have, but they aren't talking about it.
Well, I have, as I mentioned, I have seen some things similar to what you're describing online. I didn't know what kind of credence to give those videos, and I'm not quite sure what to say to you other than maybe we, if you could contact me, we could put some of your images in the hands of maybe MUFON or some of these folks who have analysts who look at video and photo images.
I have one documented subject with MUFON already. In 2005, I had an investigator here in Clovis that saw one of my videos, and it's on the MUFON website.
What'd they say?
They agree. It's an unsolved sighting. It's an actual sighting. It looks like two satellites in the northwest sky, one object moving to the southwest, another one comes down, and they intersect, and it's like they absorb each other and disappear in the night sky.
Okay, I'll tell you what we'll do, Ron. If you can figure out a way, you don't have a computer, but if you can figure out a way to get some of those images to me, we'll put them up on the Coast to Coast website. People can take a look at them, and we'll get some input from the public and maybe some of the experts who listen to the program, and we'll see where it goes. Good enough?
I love the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and others. I've shown some of these to Air Force.
Hey, Ron, are you hearing me at all?
Yes, I am. Sorry, George.
Okay. Why don't you send me the images, figure out a way to get some of them to me. We'll put them on the website. People can take a crack at them, and we'll get back to you. We won't drop it, okay? All right. Thanks very much for the call. I look forward to seeing these images. On the Skype line, Julio in Chicago. Good morning, Julio.
Hi, good morning, George. How are you this morning?
Okay.
The first time speaking with you, second time calling the show. As a fellow broadcaster, it's great to see someone who has that journalistic integrity to cover the stories. I'm only 22 years old, so thank you for all your work, sir.
You're a journalist, a broadcaster. What do you do?
Yeah, I'm a an investigative reporter. I just graduated from Western Illinois in Macomb.
Well, good luck, man. It's a tough job market out there, but good luck. What's on your mind?
Thank you. What's on my mind? Is weather modification, weather anomalies, with this huge hurricane Irene taking place. I've been, over the last couple of months, looking at various weather websites, including Intellicast. And what I've been seeing, at least tonight, are some interesting radar images that show up. I saw a YouTube video. I don't know if I can send this to you or not. It's called Intense Harpering in Hurricane Irene equals Weather Modification. And usually, from what I've noticed investigating over the last couple of months, is anytime you see an interesting weather anomaly on a radar, usually within 24 or 48 hours, a storm hits that exact location wherever you see it on a radar. For example, I had a storm hit around the Chicagoland area a couple weeks ago, or not even that, maybe a few days ago. And then watching a radar return from a few nights before, I noticed where the storm is going to hit the hardest. And if people look up from the Air Force War College, weather as a force multiplier, owning the weather in 2025, there's various weather modification patterns out there. I don't know, George. I know for some people who this could be their first time listening, they may think there's no way, you know, governments can manipulate the storms. My answer to them is just through the research. I mean, we have Google and all these different algorithms that, you know, can pinpoint, you know, certain words that can get you documents. I just wanted to know your thoughts, and if any way I can send you some videos from documents, not documents, but just radar images from the last couple of days, even one right now of just cities like Greenville, South Carolina, that could get hit pretty hard, among other East Coast cities.
Yeah, you can send it to me. George Knapp at coasttocoastam.com is my my email box here. I would just tell you, you're preaching to the choir to some degree. The Coast to Coast audience is very familiar with weather modification theories and even conspiracy ideas. I mean, it's the holy grail of weaponry. Any nation on earth would want to be able to do it, and we're certain that our government has worked on that kind of technology and tried to weaponize it. My question is this. You said about a radar imagery, an anomaly on radar that later becomes a storm. Yeah. What is anomalous about the radar images you're seeing?
Well, sometimes you see like what is called like a scalar square, or sometimes it just looks like a big old bullseye, just a big circle around a particular city. And from what I've noticed, within 24, 48 hours later, a storm hits that exact target. And for instance, now if you can go, if people want to write this down, there's a website from College of DuPage called the Next Generation Weather Lab, known as NEXRAD. I think from my research and watching videos and looking up this type of information over the last couple of months, it seems like at various airports and different locations throughout the country, they shoot up frequencies into the atmosphere in which radar returns pick it up as precipitation. And it's just a big circle, sometimes a square. It's just, George, it boggles me sometimes the different anomalies I see on radar. I'm looking at one right now. You could do this too during the break on IntelliCast, and you just see different anomalies all around this hurricane. It's just boggling, and I know I'm preaching to the choir, and I've been looking at weather modification for at least a year, and it's just scary, George.
Hey, Julio, I'm right there with you. If you want to send me the images, I'll take a look at them. Maybe we'll post them online. Good luck. Welcome to the journalism profession. We need guys like you who have an open mind and a sense of curiosity. Thanks very much. Lots of callers still to come. Jackson Brown, Rock Me on the Water from 1972, takes us into the break. This is Coast to Coast AM.